Welcome to the European Hockey Federation podcast, in conversation with the biggest names in hockey, generating insight and engagement around coaching, officiating and playing. Powered by Coach Logic and supported by FIH Academy. Presented by Jack Rolfe, the founder of a coaching lab. For this episode, we spoke with EHF educator and mentor, technical manager of Orange Road, Sven Wandermost, about challenging and affecting time due to the global pandemic. Sven shared his experience of adapting club-level hockey successfully back into the game post-COVID-19. Over to Jack.
So coaches, good morning, good evening, wherever you are joining us from. I'm Jack Rolfe, founder of the Coaching Lab, and joining from a very cloudy Perth in Australia, and Sven Wandermost from Holland, who is also joining us today. And again, as ever, thank you and welcome back to the European Hockey Federation webinar series. For those that missed the first series, you can catch up online on Coach Logic. And again, this webinar will go up on there as well, and all future ones will also go out as a podcast, so wherever you are, you can catch up and you can make your notes, and you can stay in contact with us and share your questions as we go along. So Sven, good morning, welcome.
Good morning everyone, welcome from Holland, also a bit cloudy, so I'm staying inside. Your temperature must be a little bit better than ours, but I'm looking forward to have this this breakfast meeting with you. It is a little bit later, and for some other people as well, but really excited to be here.
Sven, awesome. Coaches, we have kind of two areas of real focus today, and in two areas that I truly believe will kind of have good impact on your coaching. The first one is, you know, a situation that me and Sven have both gone through, but almost very privileged that we are back playing fully. So the return to play through COVID. What lessons has Sven learned from Holland and the impact that's had on his coaching? And then the second part of our discussion today will be around coaching new teams, accepting jobs, what to look for when you go and coach a new team, what to be really, really aware of, and how we can go. But Sven, I think a couple of minutes to yourself, give us a bit of background. How have you got to where you're at the moment? Why are you joining us today? What's your current role? And you're pretty much living the dream in the hockey paradise of the world.
Yeah, well, small introduction. I am 45 years old, and like Jack said, I'm living the hockey dream. It started 5 years ago when I had the opportunity to go to Royal Victory in Belgium, where I could become a full-time professional director of sports, as they call it, at their club. And the last couple of years, I'm doing the same actually at Oranje Rood, a big club in Holland. I think they are top three, top five of the Dutch clubs, 2,700 members, and I'm their a technical manager. Nice to know, I think, is that I really started at as a trainer on the lowest level in Holland. I started with the low division women team when I was 21 years old. And after some years, every time I tried to grow a little bit and to have better teams. Also, we're lucky to have some good people around me who coached me as a coach, so I could become a little bit better. But that's also because I started there. I did the course for the European Hockey Federation, the top coach program I did, and I'm there now as a mentor. And I also am an educator for FIH, where I did the level 4 coaching course, and I try to help as much coaches as possible around the world. And my true belief is that everybody is able to do coaching as long as you invest a lot in yourself. So I'm a little bit of a self-made coach, started from a low point, and now I'm doing these kinds of webinars, but also the online coaching for Hockey Belgium. I will do the level 2 for FIH. I went to India and Namibia, so it's really a hockey dream, and something of which I never could have believed that that would have come true. So all those coaches out there who are ambitious and really like to do something in hockey, never give up. Because I truly believe that you can chase and really become better and better as long as you're for everything. small introduction, but I think it says it all.
Awesome, Sven. Great to have you with us. Let's dive into the first conversation, the return to play. You know, obviously the people on the call are from all across the world and at different stages. You know, Australia, we're 7 weeks into the season. You know, you've come to the end of the season. But do you want to give us a bit of context of where have you come from? Where are you at now? And then we can dive into the complexities and the challenges that you faced.
Well, at first we had, of course, our lockdown, and which was very heavy because it affected all sports clubs, but also all sports professionals. And when we went into lockdown in April, that meant that actually half of March we got the sign that we had to stop. So there was no possibility anymore to train. And for lack of hockey professionals who work there, but also other sport professionals as a one-man business, they're hired. It meant that there was no income, etc. And it meant for the clubs a big loss of income. To just give you an idea about the clubs in Holland, we have some huge clubs, but also some very small clubs. We have a lot of clubs in Holland, around 300. And also a lot of members, around 250,000. But hockey is quite affordable in Holland, I think, because I was in Belgium, hockey was quite expensive because you have to pay for a lot of things as a club. And in Holland, we can make it a little bit affordable because of the investment of the government, but also because of the sponsorships and also the income of the bar. And all that fell away. So all those clubs had a very hard time. So we were very happy that around the 22nd of April, the end of April, our government said, okay, you can at least have a small startup. But it meant that the youth until 18 could have a small start with playing hockey again, which was very good because we could start at least, but then still all the income of the bar was still not there. So it was a very tough time. What was very exciting was that our youth until under 12 could immediately start without the 1.5 meter. So we could actually train freely with them. But the till the under 18, so let's say 12 till 18, could not train without the social distance. So the social distancing since was an obligation for youth above 13, and all our seniors could not start yet. But in the end, I think we were very lucky with our government because 2 weeks after, we could also prepare for the seniors and they could also have some training at the pitch with the social distance rule. Well, the social distance rule gave a lot of trouble in meaning of drills and also in meaning of organization, because you can imagine if you have a club of 2,700 members, and I have around, let's say, 120 teams and all those youngsters. We have 300 to 400 youngsters on a Wednesday afternoon who have to come in and come out, and we have to make sure that the parents could not come to the club, etc. There was a lot of organization-wise, and actually our government gave us a week because they said 22nd of April you can start. The 29th of April, you can start again with everything you wanna do, at least start up the club, which meant that we had 7 days to organize new training schedules, organize coaches for the pitch, need to organize club open, all the routing, the facilities. So it was a lot of work by a lot of people.
Oh, and Sven, let's pick up on the coaches. You know, that you've given a week's notice or whatever you said to return to play, in the role that you're in, how much support or priming did you give those coaches to say, this is what we would like to deliver, this is how we want to deliver? Obviously not touching on the constraints too much, but more the content and the delivery that coaches were delivering.
Well, The content that our coaches needed to deliver, we gave them some opportunities. So the first thing we did is that we instructed our coaches about how to deal with the 1.5 meter social distance rule, which is in Holland 1.5 meters, but I heard in other countries it's even further away, as some countries say 2 meters, other countries say 3 meters. So we instructed our coaches really well about how to deal with that. With the under 12s, it was quite easy because there the children were able to do everything. But the problem was that the coach needed to hold the 1.5 meter social distance. So to give a small example, if a child would have an injury with a ball on the ankle or something, you could actually not touch the kid because it was not allowed. So we needed to really instruct our coaches really well to make sure what to do and what not to do, and we organized that. About the content, we did, there was a lot to share. We tested with one team. So in the beginning we said, okay, we're going on the pitch with an under 16 team to see what happens and how does it work, to make sure that what we do is that we can also deliver it to our coaches so that they are really well prepared. And in the end, because I have around 70 youth teams, so 70 teams from under 10 or under 12 till under 18, those are 70 teams, which means 70 coaching slots. And with those coaching slots, we said, okay, we're going to share that information because it's 70 coaches, but we're going to share it through WhatsApp with small videos, with drawings, with instructions, just to tell them what they can do. So we gave them a lot of opportunities and also a lot of drills, but we did not really put on only the demand that they needed to fulfill a coaching session in a way from, okay, you have to do exercise 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and next week different. So we give a little bit of freedom, but we also prepared them really well about what to do and what they can do and what they can't.
I think, Sven, you probably had the same challenges as us over here, was of how do you get competition, how do you get challenge and energy into a session that is where everyone has to be 1.5 meters away and there's no kind of contact or interaction really. So what was some of the mechanisms and techniques you put into play to create more challenge, to create more energy in what could be a very flat and dull experience possibly for the return to play?
Yeah, it was I think everybody gets his challenges, and those challenges are really big. And for what I noticed is that even in a week time, you can't tackle everything. So even during those weeks, you had more troubles and stuff. One of the things was, for instance, that we could not touch the materials either in Holland. So the kids could touch the balls with the stick, but may not touch cones. As coaches, you can touch the cones, but only with gloves. So what we created, for instance, was on every pitch had an own bin, a big bin, which you can drive around the car. We put in 80 balls and the cones in there, but also bibs were still, you can't use them. So in the beginning, it's okay because you can't play any small games or duels with the under 18s, but the under 12s could also, they could play small games, but it was impossible to use bibs as well because they were not allowed to do so.
I think one of the biggest things that we did over here was we added music into training. Because it just added the energy straight away and created a bit of interaction. And I remember the first session that we had back probably in March, when would it be, May now? And it was so dull, it was so boring. And as coaches, we were racking our brains. What do we do? How do we make it more exciting? And the players actually came up with the idea of we need to add some music because it was just so quiet. And I think as coaches, that's probably something we can take away. And Sven, I know you're now back playing. So what is the things that you've taken from the experience and the challenges that you are now seeing in the hockey now it's returned, and maybe the impact that's having on you and the coaches that you're working with?
Well, the impact is, I think it's huge, and I think one of the really main things you can see is that, like you say, hockey needs to be fun, so you added music. And I think one of the things you really saw during this period is that hockey is all about, it's about playing the game. And I think it's one of the one of the topics which goes really around the world. There should we train especially game wise. But you see, if you don't have the small games or maybe the bigger games like 8v8, or you can't play the 1v1s, then hockey becomes in the beginning it's quite okay, eh? Because the takeaway is that you really can focus on basics, and basics are becoming better. But you see that players and also for coaches, it's really hard to create challenges and to make hockey still a very nice game without playing those small games. So I think that if you see what hockey is about, and what I would really take away in this last period, that it's really about playing that game, playing small games, and enjoying hockey by having those matches. Without that, I won't say hockey is boring, but I think you play a team game like this or a ball game because of the matches. And I saw in the beginning teams were very excited. 1 month we could not play, and then in the end, okay, finally we can go to the pitch, and everybody is willing to stay to the rules and the social distance. But in the end, you also see that teams have a hard time to keep that social distance and say okay, because they don't like just to pass a ball or just do scoring, or can only train the principle of intercepting, because for the rest there's not so much to do. But you experience the same, right?
Yeah, massively. It's interesting. I think, as you said, we could only intercept the ball. So one, the passing had to be good, and the understanding of space, and picking up said on that thing of no bibs. Actually, it was probably a good impact and an unintentional kind of consequence of it, because the players had to look at each other and they had to communicate, which, you know, sometimes is painful to promote players to do, is to scan the space and to communicate. And actually, it had to happen because there was no bibs. And now we're back into training. We probably see that a little bit more. And I know we spoke about this earlier. I think my training now is probably a little bit more individual focused. Yes, within the team, of course, but because we've gone from small groups or one-to-one to small groups to full training, I think one of the big themes has been the individual focus as well. And are you seeing anything similar that's impacting your training and your session design?
Well, totally, because in this part it was very hard to have, like I say, some nice games. Eh? We created some sort of games, but in the end, all went back to the individual part. Eh? For instance, you have the line ball game, where you have to pass or hit a ball over the back line of the other team. It's also quite individual and technical part. So I think on the individual part, people really got had the opportunity to develop themselves. So it's also a lot of individual coaching. It's a lot about the individual technical. Small details which you can give to those players, and I think a lot of them benefited. But I think there's also a huge part in hockey which plays at a certain level, which is very hard to create a better level, because their motor skills are like that. And for them, it become really boring, because in the end, sometimes the development didn't also go that way, because they keep stuck in the way they play hockey, and then it's very hard to keep the fun and the attention, etc. But I think for the individual player, especially the ones who really wanted to learn something, it was a very very interesting time.
Yeah, and I think as one of the challenges I kind of set myself was the messages that I shared during that small group return and that phase return, that I'm now saying the same messages, that I didn't think of it as a separate season. I just saw it as an extension of the season. So it's not, we can still get good value, and actually it's a missed opportunity, isn't it, for both players and coaches, if we don't come out of this better and hopefully more effective.
No, it's definitely not a missed opportunity, because I truly believe that it brings a lot also to you as a coach, because you needed to become creative. You needed to challenge yourself. You can't stay in your normal focus. You needed to go out of the your comfort zone to create things which are different. And it also gave you an opportunity to look different to players, and also look different into hockey, because you need to shift your focus. And I know a lot of focus in hockey is game wise, but I think it's good that that you have an opportunity to see your players in a total different way in behavior, in playing, but also in attention. It's more comfortable. That's the other side, because the competition is a little bit out, and people can focus on themselves. It's also good for their self-esteem. But in the end, I think it was very good, and it brought a lot. But it also showed me that playing hockey without games is for a lot of people. It's really tough, because we had a lot of senior teams as well, who normally come to the club just to play a small game. They don't even call it a training, but they really like to go on that pitch and immediately say, okay, we're going to play 6v6. We do that for more than an hour. And those teams in the end, okay, in the beginning they come because they want to be together, but in the end people are dropping themselves because it's the fun factor is gone.
Yeah, and Sven, I think to just bring this part of the conversation to close, I think you have a couple of videos that you're able to share. And again, coaches this go up on Coach Logic, and between myself and Sven, I think we're probably very happy to share these videos after as well. So Sven, if you just want to share your screen and talk us through what's going on and what's happening.
Perfect. Well, let me show you a little. First of all, and I think this one was very important for me. This is really it. This is how I built my youth development team as well, and this is how I work with my teams. It's a development pyramid, and what you saw is that especially what is important is the lower half, the fun, the repetition, the expertise, and inspirement. That's the coach which needs to bring it. And on the other side, you have the development of the player, which are motor skill development. So what can you do? What is your talent? Then the hockey technique and skill development, so where to use it. And then you go into individual tactics and higher. And I think we got really almost stuck in this technique and skill development. But skill development was even hard because you could not really add players or add competition or add an opponent. So what I did was we did a couple of things. So first of all, you have the individual trainings, which I created on my club. And this is also how I shared it.
Sven, do you want to just talk us through what's happening here?
Yeah, that's why I wanted to stop it, because I think it's important. What you saw in the beginning is that you have the individual part. So people are just doing some individual techniques like dribbling, etc. And then in the second part of the movie, you saw a small match element just to make it more fun. So in the beginning, they were training to dribble around one small cone. And afterward, we did a match element where they needed to start on the whistle, go around the cone as fast as possible to show who can be faster, just to make it a little bit more fun. And you can extend those drills. So that was a little bit of the individual, like a warm-up. I have that whole movie. If people are interested, I can share it on Coach Logic as well. But that's a little bit how we shared the drills with my coaches. So during WhatsApp, they got these kind of movies. The other thing was that we needed to create distance cones when we really got into group drills. So the first one was really individual. We could set cones on the sideline, put players apart. And once we started to do group drills, we created distance cones. So one player need to start here. If this one is free, you can go to that one. If it's free, you go to that one, you go to that one, and then you can go into the drill. And what you get then is a sort of stationary drills, which a lot of people do is you go from point A to point B to point C. So that's another one. So an example of those stationary drills is this one. You go from, you start here with the blue bin, you go to the side and you just follow up. And also in this one, we created a small match element. So they needed to fulfill 20 balls in 3 minutes or as much going around and scoring in that couple of minutes. And you see also here is that they need to keep the distance, which is really, really important for that. But even then, you see that it's sometimes hard to keep that distance. So in that drill, we had a small going around drills and to challenge them again. So at first, it's a technical part, practicing from point A to point B. But in the end, you want to challenge them a little bit. So we put some time pressure to make it a little bit more fun and a little bit more exciting. In the end, what I did a lot was were scoring drills like these. And then we did two groups, so separate the team in two teams. One team is on half the other half of the pitch, the other team is here, and they needed to score as much balls as possible. And they got, what is it, like 20 attempts on each side. So in the beginning you just practice, and in the end you you make a challenge like, okay, which team is better? We did not do, in this part, we did not do any duels because this is above under 18, and also the team below this was under 16, so there was not the enable or possibility to play so. In this drill, it's quite simple, two scoring options. The performance is not really well in this case. So they needed to pass one ball. They need to pass to the second post where some player can score it, and then you have another one who drops in. So we did a lot of these kind of drills. So if you saw this one again, then it's one pass, he receives, the other one goes. And yeah, you can create 20, maybe 30 kind of games like this. And I had to say, okay, for let's say 3, 4, 5 weeks, they really enjoyed this. But in the end, like I said, the gaming needs to come on. So I think if you see these kind of small things, then you can challenge them. So at first technical, then small matches, but also the scoring, but also the drills to go around. We were not allowed, and I need to say that, we were not allowed in that period to play any duels or any small games. It was impossible to do so. So we did not do it at that that time. Again, the under 12s, yes, totally free, but on this matter, not.
And Sven, I think you picked up on it there as well. We did the same, was the way you design the drill on the field was really, really important. And so it looked like it would in a game for the players. So we did a little bit of forehand receive on the right-hand side of the pitch. But if we did that in the middle, on the left-hand side, it wouldn't have the same feel to it. And I think that was one of the biggest challenges we put into the coaches over here was, if you're going to do a skill and a principle, where would it happen on the pitch? Because we were in luxury position, because we probably had six players for half a pitch, which would never happen normally. So we were really specific about where a drill was happening and what would it look like in the game.
I think you're right, and that's also something which you, of course, you will be helpful, and also make sure that you can use the techniques in the right position and part of the field is very important. So, like, for instance, the scoring drill, the last one, we also did a lot of things on that part. So we said, okay, top of the circle, that's always a free shot. If you're a little bit on side of the circle, it needs always to be for tip in. And when you come closer to the back line, it needs to come off the back line towards the dot, for instance. So the principles we normally used in my team for scoring were also put in those drills. So I think you're absolutely right that those are the benefits, but it's still, I think a lot of the decisions a player makes in the game depends on what your opponent is doing. And so I think it's very interesting to see, okay, can you develop the skills in a certain part of the pitch where they are very necessary? But on the other side, you can you need to add the fun element to make it joyable. If you don't make it joyable, they will not be able to fulfill those trainings or learn. You will lose a lot of motivation. And I think in this specific part, it teaches me really that you need to create that motivation to keep things going. And normally with the small games, the motivation is almost always there. And if you go to these kind of drills, it demands certain different things from players. The learning process is totally different. And I think that's very interesting, especially if you really dive into that, it can make you really a better coach.
Sven, to bring this one to a close, this part, your top two tips or your top two reflections from this period that we've gone through to coaches going through it now, what would be two things you'd share with them, your top two?
My top two would definitely be creative, make it learnable, but also make it fun and really dive into the learning process. Because what you now notice is that to learn, they really need to have two qualities, and that is to be able to visualize things. So they need to see what's happening, and are they able to take out the details? But they also need to be able to listen about the details and how to put that back in your system. So it's really, it was interesting to see how motor skills work, and every player learns in a different way. So I would definitely say, okay, go for that, and keep the distance. Make sure that your drills are really COVID proof, because we're still not there. And what I say, it's a huge responsibility for every coach to make sure that you stay away from that lockdown period, and make sure that that we don't go back into that fall back into that part, because it's
wrong. Yeah, Sven, let's move on to some more exciting and probably happier stuff for people. That process of starting a new club, or as a coach, not as a player, but working with a new team, you know, where a lot of us have come from one season, now moving to another, and you've recently moved clubs kind of in the last couple of years. What would you, and we spoke about this offline, so I know you have some good stuff to share here. When you're going to accept a job, or you're looking for a job, what are the sorts of things that you're searching and you're making notes of and you're noticing?
I think the first part is that you really must know yourself. Just diving into to a club is, in my opinion, doesn't work. I've had many clubs, because I started at 20, and I did a lot of clubs in Holland, but also in Belgium. I think one of the most important things is that you really know yourself, but also you know your goals, know your strengths, know your weaknesses. I think some people, you have coaches who are really good in forming a team and immediately going into a process of winning or pushing a team forward. You have other coaches who are really like to build something, are more patient and have that time. And I think that you really need to know yourself before you dive into a club. And if you know that, then you can have a chat with the club and see whether you fit or suit that club. Because I don't believe that every coach fits in every club. And besides that, I think you need to talk with the club. And the first thing you need to know are their goals. Where do they want to go? And what are their aims? Do they want to go for long term, or do they really say, okay, we need to win championships on a short term? It really depends on where to go. Then you need to know about the facilities, because facilities will definitely tell you what's able. For instance, I was working in Belgium on my club, and we had we needed to have a new pitch, which was very very important. But at that time, we had so less pitches that sometimes you also needed to train with two teams on a pitch, but even youth teams with four on one pitch. So what are the facilities for your team? But also, what is the youth development program behind it? Because in the end, players can come from outside, but if, for instance, the financial financial is not there to get players from the outside, then it's very important to have youth development. And are you able to have any influence on that, for instance, or how does it stand? How many players come from there? Do you need to use those players? So all those goals of the club, I think it's really, really important. And also, what are the possibilities? Does the club have any possibilities? And it's interesting to see if you can cope with that. Besides the club, because you need to have that feeling, I think the other really important thing is that you get a good view on the team. And sometimes you get a team with less players, for instance. I've also been starting with clubs where in the beginning I had 10 players. And then you need to start to find a lot of new players, which is very challenging, but also sometimes very hard to go for the goals, but also to set the team. And I think if you watch that team, you should watch the age balance. For instance, it's very young, or is it a very an older team? And what is the experience of those players? Where do I need to start? So you need to really find a starting thing. And another one, I think, which is really important, and that's really a takeaway for me the last couple of years, you need to have competition within your team. If you don't have competition within your team, it's very hard to create a team who's willing to go forward. There needs to be competition to set a path. And for that matter, I truly believe that you need enough players to create that competition. So that's something which you need to think about. And also, which you should look for in a team is the special qualities. Do you have a good PC? How is your goalie? What is the effort of the striker? So really dive in, dig in. And that can be done by videos, but also with a lot of information from the players itself, but also from the club. And the final thing for me, which is really important, is the staff. And especially, what are the possibilities in that? You need to think about, okay, what is important in my staff? You want to have all, but if it's not possible, you need to think about, okay, what's more important? An assistant or a mental coach? Or do I want a physiotherapist or physical trainer? For me, the assistant coach is actually one of the key things. And there you need to find somebody who is complementary to you. So, like I said, you need to know yourself. You need to know your strong points, you need to know your blind spots, and in your staff you need to have people who are able to work on those blind spots. And I think those are, for me, if you go into a new club, those things, the club, the team, the facilities, and the staff would be elementary. And then in the end, and I think some of the coaches sometimes turn it around, in the end, then the financial part comes. Because if you start with the financial part, it's not good. I know that clubs also then very often stop. But if you, it's something which is important, especially if you live from it, but don't start with it. So, what would you add if you would say you start with a new team?
I think it's an interesting one. I think I've gone through the process in the past kind of couple of months, and I think I had an idea, of course, of how you want to play, but you don't know until you meet the players and you see them in action. So I took a lot of time to understand the players and didn't really, I asked a lot of them, of course, but I wanted to see them and didn't want to constrain them. So I didn't want to say, okay, you have to play like this, you have to do this within the first couple of weeks, because I wanted to see what they had. And actually the most surprising thing was the amount of good ball players we had and the amount of good, ball carriers we had. So actually that changed the way we set up our team. But if I went in straight away with a different philosophy, because I had an idea and I wasn't going to look at the players, it would be a very different picture to what it is now. So I really took time to understand the team in front of me, but also what goes on outside of their lives in hockey as well.
It's true, because in the end, I think the personal approach as a coach also decides the success you will have with your team. It really depends on the qualities, and if you're able to look a little bit further than your own style, it will give a lot of opportunities. But I think to do that, it asks a lot of you from you as a coach. to adapt to different styles as well, because it's sometimes tactically also very hard, and that's why it's interesting, because in the end you wanna make the best decision makers on the pitch, eh? So the individual decides the outcome, eh? That's a little bit what it's said. And I think that's also how you need to develop those players. So if you go back to that pyramid of development, I think those first three stages are the most important one to come to a higher level. But it's very interesting. It's also very nice to start a new process with a team.
And Sven, I think you probably had a similar that, you know, when you go to a different country and you're country of birth is not the country that you end up coaching in. I was quite conscious that, you know, I'm an Englishman in Australia, and what may work in England may not work in Australia. And I had to understand the culture, and I had to be part of that culture and not just copy and paste something that works in another country. And you probably could share, you know, a quick experience maybe from being a Dutchman in Belgium, maybe.
Well, yeah, it was really very interesting, because I believe that you need to stay as close as possible to a culture of a country. And I think if you watch the Belgium head coach from the men, Shane McAleese, I think he did an amazing job, because he really put the Belgium in their strength, because in my opinion, Belgian people are really creative, fast, they like to attack. Strong individuals, technically very, very good players. And I think in the end, that's where you need to go to. And I think it's really important to do that. When I was in Namibia, for instance, it was really, really nice. Huge experience. I went there, I needed to coach them in Zimbabwe after a 36-hour bus trip. We went there, and our first game was against Egypt. And the day before, we just arrived and we trained in the evening, and there were no lights, so we could only train half an hour. And the day after, we needed to play against Egypt and 9 in the morning, because otherwise it would be too hot. And I know that we lost that game 17-1. I've never been so small in my dugout, not really, but we still tried to keep fighting. And for what I learned there is that Namibian players are really, they're really proud of who they are. So we created a credo, a motto, and we said if you watch the Namibian flag, but also the logo of the federation, it has an eagle. So we said, okay, this happened. How are we going to continue? And then we said, okay, the eagle will never give up. And that's what we did every meeting, every quarter meeting, every break. That's what we told each other. The eagle never gives up. And the good part was that we the next day we drew 4-4. And in the last 2 minutes, we were 4-1 behind, 4-2 behind. We made it 4-4. And in the final game, the third day, we drew 3-3. And we were also 3-1 behind. But like we said, the eagle never gives up, and that was really, it was super. And it is so nice to develop a team in a certain way, but also work in that process, but especially stay close to their culture. Like I said, in Belgium, but also in Namibia, make sure that they keep believing in who they are. Don't change the confidence, because it's you can make people very easy uncomfortable by saying, okay, I'm the expert, and you know less, and that's tough. So don't do that. And I saw a nice comment from Chris just in the chat box, and he said, okay, it's not only about where to start, but it's also where you can go with a team. And I think that's right, because if you don't believe you can't develop them, then it's already yeah, not such a nice journey, but it's really true. But Namibia was very interesting on that part. 36 hours bus ride, losing 17-1, and then trying to pick everybody up, because you can imagine that the confidence was zero or even below zero at that time. It was tough.
Sven, thank you for your time and for the stories. I think it's, you know, very grateful for your time and energy in this. and coaches on the call as ever. Do share your reflections with us, EuroHockey.org on Twitter and across Facebook and socials and the Coaching Lab. And Coach Logic as well, would love to hear what you're up to. And I'm sure between myself and Sven, we're happy to answer any further questions that you may have in the future and the challenges that you're coming through. But again, thanks for joining us. And Sven, again, thanks for giving up an hour of your morning. I'm sure you're very busy. So it's great to have you with us. And yeah, thanks a lot.
You're more than welcome. It was very nice to share something. And you can see that, we're always short on time. Once we start to talk about hockey, it's never enough. So thank you for your time. And I'm going to enjoy a little coffee, I think. Thanks a lot.
Well deserved.
So everybody who listened.
Well deserved, Sven. Top work. Have a good summer.
You too. Enjoy your time.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the European Hockey Federation podcast, presented the Coaching Lab, powered by Coach Logic and supported by IFIH Academy. More podcasts will follow for series 2 over the next few weeks. Follow European Hockey Federation on social media to keep in touch.